got a phone call from Jamie Oliver saying, hey, I need you to DJ a party for me, please. I mean, I was DJing everything he asked me to. Every birthday for him and his missus, any kind. I was like his DJ. And he's like, can you DJ a party? I go, when? He's like, it's in 2 weeks. Kevin just sold Instagram for $1 billion to Facebook, and he wants to throw a party in London. I go, okay, but my book deadline for my first book is the next day. I don't understand people who just eat for sustenance. I don't get that. I'm running and I'm kind of waving and laughing. I run over Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones. Who's talking to Boy George? I know Madonna told me to quit name dropping, but man, I run over Ronnie Wood. He's so little, you know? And I get behind.
Shout out to all of these people.
And then I get behind the decks and I, you know, get my next song on. And then I look in front of the pizza oven.
Yeah.
This has got to be the weirdest pairing of two people you would never expect to be talking to each other at a party. Tiny Tempa and...
Welcome to Scenes. Conversations on culture with the people who know it best. We chat with guests across music, art, fashion, film, sport, and technology in a bid to understand the scenes we love that little bit better. My name is Kosti Kontaravdis, and today, Max and I jump into part two of the Christian Stevenson episode. So if you've not listened to part one and you're interested in action sports, filmmaking, and adventure, go back and listen to episode one, because in this episode, Christian talks about his time as a DJ and radio host into becoming one of the most famous names in barbecue with his signature style he refers to as Catertainment. So, this is part two of the DJ Barbecue Scene, brought to you by Truant London.
At a festival called Rock Nest, and I was DJing with a buddy of mine who's the Prodigy's DJ, and he headlined on the Friday, and then we swapped, and I got the headline on the Saturday, and I was kind of shitting it, because he's really good. And Toby One opened up for me, and I'm like, that's going to be a hard set to follow. And I did it. And everybody got naked in the tent. It was, we were like 15 people deep outside of our tent. It was all going off, and I was just killing it with my tune selection.
Must have been cold in Scotland getting naked.
Yeah, well, we you know, it was summer, so it was still pretty warm.
Still Scotland though.
And everybody started taking their clothes off, and I'm like, that. I'm like, man, what the fuck am I gonna do when I turn 40? Yeah. What the fuck am I gonna do when I turn 50? And I was like, I know, I'm gonna cook barbecue and DJ at festivals. I know, I'm going to be DJ Barbecue.
Yeah.
And that's when I created Catertainment right there. And then I was like, I'm going to invest in some smokers. I'm going to invest in a sound system, and I'm going to do this whole thing and create a whole nother destination of festivals and rebrand. Plus it's hard to grow old in skateboarding and snowboarding. You know, it's a very, Tony Hawk is one of the few.
And he's doing an amazing job. Yeah.
He's done an incredible job. And we're the same age, you know, I'm like, wow. And he had a broken leg for the last year.
And then came back.
Yeah. Best piece of advice I ever got off Tony. So I had the Groms, and we went to see his gigantic skate park tour. And I've hosted some of his demos, and some, like, we did American Wasteland, that PlayStation game. I hosted that for Tony. Anyway, we're at one of his jams with all these pros, and I got a meeting with all the Groms and Tony. So we go into his dressing room, and I go, Tony, would you please give these kids some advice? You know, what's the best piece of advice you can give them? And he said, wherever you are, wherever you're doing a demo, or, you know, for like your skateboard company or whatever brand you're working with, do the best you can. Like, say you're going to turn up in the middle of nowhere in the Baltics, and there's going to be a mini ramp with holes in it. Don't complain. Skate around those holes, because every kid has come to, they've traveled. Some of these kids might have traveled, you know, hours, maybe overnight to come see you skate, because it's a special thing to have a skateboarder. Do the best you can with what you're given, is what he said.
Mm. Gratitude and humility.
Yeah.
Love that. Thank you, Tony, for that amazing lesson. But back to you, Christian Stevenson.
Sorry.
At one point, you were the number two barbecue channel on YouTube. You worked with Jamie Oliver on his Food Tube project.
Yeah.
Which was number one.
Number one in Europe. Over 5 million subscribers, you know, when I left the family and went off on my own. Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
Our question for you is, what is the secret sauce to a successful cooking channel?
Man, that's about, gosh, I wish I could figure that one out.
Yeah, nice and short and concise answer. Come on, one word, baby.
I think good food is good time. So if you can make the food look good on camera, like Jamie told me a couple things, pile high. You know, people eat with their eyes. Okay. So you just got to make that food look sexy. But also, one thing we always did with all of our shoots, all of our books, we never did any kind of hacks to make it look pretty, but unedible. Everything was edible. So whenever, because we'd have a lot of food left over for a book shoot. Well, I'd plan on going to a friend's wedding and catering his wedding. So I would save all that food and then I'd turn up and be the caterer. Like, you know, waste not, want not. But yeah, I think it's just... I think if you're enjoying it, the audience will enjoy it. And I love eating, you know, and I love getting excited about the food. And, you know, I don't understand people who just eat for sustenance. I don't get that. Like, I've got friends, well, they want to go surfing. I'll take them surfing around Portugal. And I'm like so excited to show friends of mine from my hometown all these great restaurants that I know of. And then they're just like, they're not bothered. And I'm like, what?
How?
Yeah, they go, oh, to me, it's just sustenance. I'm like, ugh!
They'll just crack open a Huel and start drinking it. I've seen people do that, and you're like, we're traveling, and I know it's convenient to drink a Huel, but like, there's amazing food here.
Yeah. And that, you know, quickest way to someone's heart is through their stomach and their ears. And that's really what we do as a caterer and, you know, and a sound system is to serve good food and good tunes. And then you get good times. And people say my favorite place, you know, at that festival was DJ Barbecue because we're showing a good time. Plus, you know, we love our, you know, our dance, our indie, our rock, but we also know our audience. And one thing I learned from DJing on radio, DJing to crowds, play to the audience. If they want to hear, if you know you can fill a dance floor with Whitney Houston, I want to dance with somebody, you freaking play it. Yeah. You know, I know I can make people go crazy to Carly Rae Jepsen, Call Me Maybe.
Yeah.
Because it is probably one of the best songs ever written.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I'm going to piss
off. Shout out to Carly Rae.
20% of that crowd, but the 80% are going, oh my God, I love this song so much.
I read a review that you played a track from the Moana soundtrack.
You're welcome by Dwayne
The Rock Johnson. Another shout out. Because one of your chefs knew every word and people in the queue, people who are enjoying the food would just be like enamored by this performance.
Well, so my partner in crime and cooking and everything in life is a guy called Chris Taylor, Choppy.
So you posted a little Valentine's shout out to
Choppy. Yeah. Choppy. And all of us doing Kate Winslet, you know, the Celine Dion track. Those photos are from that rendition. You know, we're doing, you know, Kate and Leonardo DiCaprio. And he's in a heavy metal band called Carry On, which I think is the word for a roadkill. And they dress up as pirates and do covers of Megadeth and AC/DC and Metallica with pirate voices. So he loves performing. But he's also a dad of two kids. He's got a third on the way, young dad. So we love to entertain, you know, kids, adults, and if we can keep a full family happy with music, entertainment, and good food, you know, we can pay the bills.
That's what it's all about. So beyond that, you've also got 160,000 YouTube subscribers, which is a massive audience on a platform like that. Yet it feels like you're now making the shift to just Instagram and TikTok. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what inspired that and the benefits of doing it.
I don't know if there's any benefits. YouTube's a full-time job, my friend.
Right.
At one point it was 180,000 or 187,000. So I've lost a lot.
Sorry.
I left my ex-wife in 2015, 16. Thought I could just carry on just concentrating on YouTube, which was my plan. And then my father called me. He's like, Christian, you need to get the kids, because they hadn't gone to school for a long time. Their mother was unschooling them. And I was like, what? How am I going to be me? How am I going to fund everything, fund them, feed them, pay the mortgage? He's like, you just got to raise these kids on your own. So I decided to get full custody, start writing cookbooks. So I could cook from the backyard, write recipes, just sit in the backyard, raise the kids. And, but I had to kind of put YouTube on the back burner, which has been there for 7 years on the back burner. I am going to revitalize it. And
an exciting exclusive.
Well, the problem is YouTube is landscape, and like this is landscape, right? And then Instagram is portrait. So
well, we got to do the cut downs. Yeah. We got to do the edit. It's a whole operation.
Yeah. Multiple jobs.
Yeah.
So
I just kind of went Instagram and was able to build it up. And crazy enough, I wasn't DJ Barbecue on Instagram. I was DJ underscore Barbecue. And back in 2014, I got a phone call from Jamie Oliver saying, "Hey, I need you to DJ a party for me, please." I mean, I was DJing everything he asked me to do. Every birthday for him and his missus, any kind. I was like his DJ. And he's like, "Can you DJ a party?" I go, "When?" He's like, "It's in 2 weeks. Kevin just sold Instagram for $1 billion to Facebook, and he wants to throw a party in London." I go, "Okay, but my book deadline for my first book is the next day." And he's like, "But you can't say no to Jamie because he got me the book deal."
Yeah.
It was him on a chairlift a couple months before saying, "You know what your problem is, Christian?" I go, "What's my problem, Jamie Oliver?" He's like, "You have to be awake to make money." I go, "Well, yeah, you go to work, you do your job and you get paid." He's like, "You need to learn how to make money while you're sleeping." And I go, "Well, how am I going to do that?" He's like, "Books." And I was like, who's going to give me a book? And he goes, "I'll get you a book deal. I'll make a phone call." And he got me a phone call with Penguin, got me the book deal. Then he's got me this DJ gig. And I'm like, "Well, I'm going to be late on this book deal, but you know, you got to do it." So I go to this party, and I, as soon as I arrive, and I have a grill, a big oil drum grill with my logo on it. And I put my decks in there. So it looks like I'm DJing out of a barbecue.
Yeah.
And as I arrived to set everything up, I saw the wish list, like the guest list. And I'm like, this is all A-list. I thought it was gonna be like a C-list party. No, man, there's Cheryl Cole ain't coming to this. Back then, Cheryl Cole was big.
Oh man, she's still big to me.
So hot. And yeah. And I saw the list and I'm like, no one's gonna be here. This is, you're really shooting for the stars. So I go and I get my spandex onesie on, I get behind the decks and I'm DJing. I look at the dance floor and it's just super beautiful people. I'm like, they must have hired like a modeling firm to fill this party out amongst all these beautiful women. And I'm like, they just don't look like they're from England. And they were American actresses. In the middle of them all was Jared Leto. And I'm like, okay. So I got some prints going, but then I had to go to a wee. The problem is in a spandex outfit, you know.
You got
to
take the whole thing off.
Yeah. So I put a CD on and I knew I could play two songs in a row. I'd be okay. I had a little mix CD so I could leave the decks. So I start running towards the toilets and they were downstairs in Jamie Oliver's 15. Jamie's photographer, David Loftus, who's the most published food photographer in the world. He was about to shoot my book. He's like, DJ Barbecue, come here. DJ Barbecue, Pippa Middleton, DJ Barbecue. And I go, "Hi, Pips." And I spun around. I go, "Can you unzip me? I really have to wee." And I run down this. She unzips me. And I'm like, "Oh, okay. Thanks." And I run downstairs and I'm doing my thing and I'm kind of laughing. I'm like, "I bet you she's never had that line."
Yeah.
And I come back up and I go, "Do you mind if I get a photo?" And she's like, "That was a first." And I got a photo with her and David Loftus. And then I can hear my song finishing, you know.
Gotta go.
So I'm running and I'm kind of waving and laughing. I run over Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones. Who's talking to Boy George? Oh, I know Madonna told me to quit name dropping, but man, I run over Ronnie Wood. He's so little, you know. And I get behind.
Shout out to all of these people.
And then I get behind the decks, and I, you know, get my next song on, and then I look in front of the pizza oven.
Yeah.
This has got to be the weirdest pairing of two people you would never expect to be talking to each other at a party. Tiny Tempa and Boris Becker. We're just chatting away in front of the pizza oven. I'm like, Jamie Oliver puts together some crazy parties. Well, Kevin from Instagram, who just
sold
his company for $1 billion.
But that goes to what you were saying.
That's nuts, man.
Good music, good food, and these are
good times.
Good times. And I think that's such it's a tale as old as time, you know, bringing people together. Food does that. And that's probably how a lot of people think when they're looking at your channel and they see that passion that you have for being the performer, being the chef, being the person who's like connecting people, being someone who loves being there and sharing all of these stories. But I'm wondering, how did you get so pumped?
I found out recently from my missus, who's a mental health worker. Shout out to Camille.
Shout out, Camille.
She says I'm most definitely undiagnosed ADHD. And I remember my dad having a hard time dealing with my hyperness as a kid. Like one time I think he just couldn't handle it. He went into the pantry and pulled out a case of Pepsi. He goes, it's the caffeine and sugar. And he cracked open every one and poured them down the sink in front of me. And I'm, no, Dad, don't.
Not the Pepsi.
Not the Pepsi. My poor father. Oh, because he was a single father raising two kids as well. He was.
Yeah.
He did it on his own. I've always been pretty hyped up. And I like entertaining people. My mom was the disco queen of the East Coast. So my mom
was a
model, a dancer. Quite the extrovert. My father, not so much, but my dad was a lovely, level-headed dude from the Midwest. And I think I got a lot from him, and I definitely got my mom's show-offiness. My mom would get paid to dress up as Wonder Woman and go to men's conventions and sit on men's laps.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. She was Miss Ocean View, Miss Virginia Beach. She won all the pageants. So in Virginia Beach, they have a mountain called Mount Trashmore where they would race soapbox derbies down, and she'd be at the bottom with the kind of gold lame, with the sash, Miss Virginia Beach, Miss Trashmore. That's an unfortunate pageant.
Yeah, man. Not a great pageant.
And where she'd have to, you know, give the trophy and kiss the sweaty, you know, teenager. And that was my mom, man.
Beautiful.
That's awesome. I feel when you're raised with that commitment and excitement, that confidence and that excitement around you, it does liberate you to want to, I don't want to say show off, but it is. It's entertain people, and like, you don't worry about how you're coming across. You just want to like be a vibrant person in that room and be someone who connects people.
You can't care what people think about you. You just got to go out there and try it, you know?
Yeah.
You're not going to make everybody happy, but hopefully you'll make some people happy. During lockdown, I went nuts on social. I thought there's going to be a lot of unhappy, depressed people out there. And I went hell for leather on social. Like, I was just posting everything. So I'm in a house with three boys and a dog. And I would just film everything. I go through my record collection. I go in the backyard. I just film me hanging out with the boys. You know, I had a place to film so I could actually make content. And I just goofed off, you know, just was goofy as hell and just had fun with it. Didn't care what I was throwing out there. I just documented everything. And you know when you can see someone's social stories, then when they're like,
like
30 a day. And of course I was putting on 1,000 followers a week because you're getting sent up high in the algorithm because you're so busy. And after about a month of doing it, I remember every morning I go downstairs to make my coffee and I'd open up my DMs on Instagram and I bawl my freaking eyes out. People saying, man, I've had a tough time. But, you know, just looking at your stories and just seeing how happy you guys are and just you making me laugh and you really turned me around. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and then there's like 21 of these messages every morning. And then I was able to host a live fire course kind of during lockdown because I think schools had a rule. My friend has a live fire kind of barn down in Sussex and we were able to have minimal amount of people. And all these guys came and they were like, I know we're not allowed to touch, but I need to hug you. And I go, yeah, fuck it. Give me a hug.
Oh, man, we all did it.
They go, what's wrong? They go, well, I was in a dark place. Lockdown was tough. I lost my job. I got furloughed. I lost my job. And then a friend of mine said, you should get this book and learn to barbecue. So they would recommend fire food. And they said, it transformed me because all of a sudden I had something to do for the kids because I was always out earning the money. And these guys were just like, you gave me purpose. I'm like, oh man, no, you gave yourself purpose. I had some keys to, you know, the ignition, you know, this fire food, you know, a Weber grill. And because I think cooking good food for people is empowering, you know,
100%.
And feeding your family is empowering.
Yeah.
That felt good. You know, and then I realized, oh God, I'm exhausted from all this social media.
It takes it out of you, though.
It does, man. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah,
I've been doing it for a long time, man. Social media since 2013, I've been doing it.
Right.
That's a long stint. Over a decade of doing social media.
But you help people and you entertain people. And I think John Cleese said, lifting people's spirits is the greatest vocation to have.
Yeah.
And you embody that in all of your snowboarding films, all of your chef content and barbecue
content. It lifts
content.
Your spirit. It lifts my spirit doing that to other people, helping them. We all grow together, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's, I mean, I think that's why comedians do live shows.
There's
nothing better than getting that laugh loud, that live. I mean, you know, that feels good.
Yeah.
You know, getting someone out of a dark hole.
But the comedians see thousands of smiling faces, whereas when you're doing it just for your channels, you don't get that.
No, but you get people commenting and slipping into your DM.
Yeah.
And I don't let them get lost, like a Lizzo song.
Nice. So Jamie Oliver clearly had a big part in showing you, as you would quote, how to make money in your sleep. And those cookbooks, right, aren't just cookbooks you'd find on Amazon. These are the best-selling books in barbecue. You are actually the best-selling barbecue book author in the UK.
Yep.
And
best-selling British barbecue book of all time.
Yeah. And Jamie Oliver's books, amazing. He's constantly like smashing. He's clearly got something. Do you think there's a secret to making an amazing cookbook?
I like storytelling, as you can probably tell. And what we always do with our books is we tell a story before we get to the recipe. There's a zillion cookbooks out there with a recipe. But I think it's fun to give people history, storytelling, why this recipe's in there. And I remember I started doing that and with the first book that Jamie got me, and it was like, they put little bits in there. And then the next book, we did it more of it, you know, and then you open up the inside cover and it's like songs to and albums to listen to when you're cooking barbecue. It's about, you know, giving people a perspective of why that's in there. And then they go, okay, this is a big recipe for you. This is what your mom cooked for you as a kid. You know, it's, you know, you had it every 2 weeks from your mom. And you celebrate those. I name a lot of my recipes after my grandma from this side, grandma from that side. And we just had a little baby girl 3 months ago, and we named her after Della, who a lot of my cooking comes from my mom's mom. You know, Della Hurst, shout out.
Shout out.
Big shout out.
Yeah.
Do you think it affects flavor? Do you think it can affect the experience for the person trying the food?
Well, I think any kind of history helps. And perspective and
sure,
and yeah, if it's just like a process,
yeah,
it's a bit boring.
Yeah,
but you're taking in the food with all of your different senses, not just your taste. You know, you need to hear it. Like the music that you're pairing it with goes such a far away as well.
Well said. That's it. You're pairing it. You're winning them with dinner.
Do you have a favorite song or album to barbecue to?
I mean, I always make lots of crazy mixtapes, but gosh, that's a good, you know, there's
that's
so
a
many,
tough question.
Well, I mean, I can give you maybe 10 albums in my top 10.
Yeah.
So Dinosaur Jr., Green Mind. There's Nothing Wrong with Love, Built to Spill. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, their first album without Neil Young, although I think Neil Young was involved in it. Pavement, Crooked Brain, Beastie Boys, Check Your Head.
We were talking about Axis. Before the show.
Axis Bold as Love.
Yeah.
One of the best albums ever created. Jimi Hendrix, man. Oh my Lord. So on the way in here, Axis Bold as Love, one of Jimi Hendrix's best albums. Castles Made of Sands on there, Little Wing.
Of course.
A buddy of mine, the chef that I trained under, the guy that I used to work for at the beach at Cape Bunting Seafood House, all you can eat crabs and fried chicken for $19.99.
That's going to be that next radio ad now. Yeah.
I was a chef in the afternoon and then I was wait tables in the evening for him. And because you can make more money waiting tables because of the tips.
Yeah.
I used to live with the chef. He would let me crash in his act at his little beach house. And he was a chef in New York City and he was at a gig watching this band and he was in his own band. Called Chiba Chiba, which
great
is
name.
Weed, right?
Yeah, that's sweet, sweet Chiba.
How's the name of your band? It's so cool, Dan. Yeah. And Dan said Jimi Hendrix was in the crowd recording the band on stage.
Okay.
And so everybody's like, oh my God, Jimi Hendrix is here. And he's just a fan of the band on stage. I don't know who the band is. The band finishes. They did a lock-in. 30 people stayed in there. Hendrix just recorded Axis Bold as Love. No one's heard it yet. And he got on stage with his guitar and played it from beginning to end. And Dan was there listening to Axis Bold as Love in its entirety.
Crazy.
What an exceptional talent.
Yeah. And Dan does, in my first book, it was Woodstock Dan's green beans, because he was also at Woodstock. And I used to eat them all the time. It was one of the sides he had with, like, you know, chicken and the crabs. I go, this is the most Moorish thing ever. Why is it so good? He's like, lots of pepper, caramelized red onions, and nutmeg. And the nutmeg sends it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Into the green beans.
So are you the kind of chef who...
would not expect that.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Try it.
I will.
Grate some fresh nutmeg in there with some caramelized onions and some black pepper and a little bit of salt.
Yeah. Naturally.
So do you like revel in the simplicity of a recipe like that more so than perhaps the technical complex style of cooking?
I just want food to be yummy. So yes.
Right.
If it's a complex recipe that will deliver something good, but here's the thing. And Jamie, Jamie Oliver advice. We were at his festival when he used to do that festival with Alex James from Blur. I know Drake told me to quit name dropping. and I go, what are you doing for your demo on the main stage? He's like, I'm going to do a waffle. I'm like, is it like the best waffle recipe in the world? He's like, no, it's an 8 out of 10 waffle. Yeah. It's one mug of this, one mug of this, one mug of this. It's memorable. I could do the 10 out of 10 waffle, but by the time they get done doing it, they're not going to want to eat it because they're going to be so exhausted from cooking it.
Yeah.
Keep it simple, stupid.
That's what my whole thing was about. And I think why Jamie Oliver's 5 ingredients really turned me.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, I went from being able to cook like 3 things to now there was like 50 things that I could suddenly cook. And it was simplicity and that ability to be able to take just these 5 things and make a really tasty piece of food.
Accessible food.
Yeah. Often in under like 20 minutes, half
go.
Hour, which is really helpful.
I met him, the first time I met him was at his 30-minute meal book launch.
Yeah.
I was his
the
DJ.
OG.
And that's how I met Jamie Oliver. They, his people knew me and they go, hey, we're looking for a DJ for Jamie's food book launch. He's never had a launch party. We thought we'd have a party. So they go, can you send us a mixtape of what you would play or a sample? And I go, I don't know what I want to play. I basically bring all my music. I look at the crowd and I play to the crowd. Well, we need to know what you're going to play. I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to play. So I sent a bunch of my music down to a buddy of mine. I go, can you make a mini mashup for me? Like, you know, just put it all together. And I got the gig. And nice. and that's how I became his DJ and then his friend. And got to go snowboarding with him a bunch.
Mm.
He just got signed to Weber. And so I'm on the Weber family, Weber grills. They're like my favorite grill. I mean, it's funny because I held out because I had other grills and they were offering me money. I go, I cook on a Weber. I want to work with Weber.
Yeah.
And they came through. And he just got signed up last week. Weber, they make the best grill, the Kettle 57 Master Touch. Crushes it.
There's going to be a promo code at the end of this episode.
There we go. Let's see if I can do that.
That'd be great.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And he's on the family. So I messaged him. I slipped into his DMs. I go, dude, you want to do some collab? He's like, that would be awesome. I'm like, he actually got to read a DM? Because, you know, that guy's got millions of subs. He answered. So, yeah. Look out for some Jamie Oliver DJ Barbecue Weber content.
Hell yeah.
We'll see. He's a busy man. And the
good again. The time
2030.
Yeah.
So, in your latest series, which is called Lost In, you can watch that on YouTube. You ate yourself. You ate your way across America.
I've only just shifted that weight the last couple months. Jesus Christ.
So, with that said, you must have dined at some of the greatest barbecue joints in the world, and I speak on behalf of every person in the world when I ask you. Where is the best barbecue?
The best barbecue is in your own backyard. I think, you know, back when I was doing skateboarding and snowboarding, like people would say, who's the best snowboarder? I go, the one having the most fun. The one who's cooking food for himself and finally figures out how to do brisket. Who did a pulled pork sandwich. Who finally made tender fall off the bone ribs.
Yeah.
But there are some phenomenal barbecue restaurants. Peg Leg Porker's one of my favorites in Nashville. Martin's, Edley's, also three fine places. Home Team Barbecue in Charlottesville, Carolina. In London, Smokestack, great barbecue joint.
Smokestack's near us, no?
Yeah, just Shoreditch, right?
Shoreditch.
Yeah, amazing. Dave Carter, who's also got Manteca doing Italian.
That's literally next to our office.
There we go. Manteca crushes it. That's Lychee. I remember Leachy working at Kitty Fisher's, which is a restaurant in Maida Vale, or off Piccadilly. And he was there under Thomas Perry, who won Best New Chef at Kitty Fisher's. And I would go there with Ken Block, the late Ken Block.
R.I.P.
And Joey Tribbiani. We would go down there. I've had multiple dinners down there with those guys.
A.K.A. Matt LeBlanc.
Matt LeBlanc, right? Man. Shout out Matt. Yeah. Matt told me the best story. So Matt LeBlanc has a ranch in California.
Yeah.
And he likes to cook barbecue. He loves barbecue. He loves eating meat. And
I can see that.
Twice he's gotten wild boar, where they've hunted wild boar, and twice they haven't cooked it properly. And he's got that crazy disease you get if you don't cook it properly. But he told me that they in America, we have a thing called the 4-H Club. You have young farmers here where a kid raises a rabbit or a lamb or a cow, and then they get a ribbon for it. Well, in America, they auction them after they do the, you know, if you win Best in Show, it gets auctioned right afterwards. So you can buy the happiest cow in California. Okay. So Matt LeBlanc sends a buddy of his to the county fair, the state fair, to bid on one of the top three. You don't need to buy like the happiest auction cow. But he'll go and buy, like, you know, the number two best cow, yeah, raised after the top farmer in the country's daughter, finished off on beer. You know, she's been looking after this cow with so much love. He'll buy that cow and send it to slaughter. keep a lot of the meat fresh.
Yeah.
The rest goes into a couple, you know, freezers, and then he'll just throw a party and just cook up like the best,
the happiest cow ever. The happiest cow ever, you know.
Happy cows taste better, man.
Yeah, man. And that's a really important statement to make, because like, we've spoken a little bit about just complexity and how you create these meals, but what about the quality? How important to you is the quality?
It's everything. I mean, right, you know, terroir, how the animal is treated. Luckily, we have very high welfare
in the UK.
Laws here in the UK. So my produce is top notch. It's stupidly expensive, but it tastes phenomenal. Mm. And it is everything. I try to source, you know, locally. I try to buy from my local mom and pop shops. So I have a butchery near Sydenham called The Butchery. It's in Forest Hill. And the guy who started it, Nathan Mills, he would go to every farm where he was buying animals from. He would meet the farmer. He would see what the animals
were eating. Meet the cow.
Yeah. And they would buy a whole animal. So it's nose to tail cooking. So a lot of times, my favorite thing to cook right now are birria tacos, you know, pulled beef. Mm. A lot of people use short rib or chuck or brisket. I use beef neck, because normally that's the cut that they're just going to take off all the meat and grind it up for burgers. But I'm like, well, the sweetest meat's next to the bone. It's a cheaper cut. I can get a lot of meat off that neck. And yeah.
Because ultimately, right, we're in a cost of living crisis at the time. We are. Recording this podcast.
Big time.
So when people buy your cookbook and they see these certain recipes, is there a statement in there that says, please use the very best quality, or it's just like
try to buy local, right? Not everybody can afford local. Everybody can, you know, I still buy, you know, the 5-6 quid chickens, because I got 3 kids to feed. But if I can afford it, I'll buy like a slow growth bird, because the last thing that develops on a turkey and a chicken is the fat. It takes 3 months for the fat to develop on a chicken. It takes 6 months on a turkey. And they cook quicker, they taste better, and those bones will make a great stock. But I also got to feed a lot of growing up teenage boys. Yeah. So I'll buy cheaper chickens just because I can't afford it all the time. Buy the best you can afford.
But that's a really nice simple thing to remember.
But if you can support local, do it. It's like, you know, say someone wants to buy some camera gear. You know about camera gear. I'm all, just tell them, buy the best you can afford.
Yeah.
Same with computers, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the more you work, the more income that comes in, you can then slowly but steadily increase the quality and of your camera equipment, of your chickens.
That's it.
Whatever it is. So in this hypothetical world that I'm about to put you in, Christian.
Uh-oh.
If you had an unlimited budget, what would be your ultimate dream project?
Oh my Lord. Grills. Remember MTV Cribs?
Yeah.
I would love to cook with like Mick Jagger, because I think if you're cooking with a celebrity, they're not going to be so guarded.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be thinking about what they're cooking. You know, you ask him to cook. He cooked me your favorite thing. and I'll cook you my favorite thing. And then I can snoop around their house and do a cribs. Although they probably stopped doing cribs because they were getting robbed. You know, hey, to get inside of the house.
Yeah, it's got a bit more fancy now. It's like AD, Architectural Digest.
Yeah.
It's a bit more like upmarket.
But I used to love cribs.
Oh, you know? It was the best show, man. That and Pimp My Ride was my childhood.
So really Wayne, was. Who did Rad with me, he went on to do, he missed the last Rad tour because he was directing Pimp My Ride International with Tim Westwood and Little John.
Oh my God.
So he was in Portugal. He was in Lisbon with Little John, and Wayne's in one Winnebago. No, in one, in the support car. They got Little John in a limo, and Wayne's like radioing in lines he wants Little John to say, you know, as a director for Pimp My Ride. And Little John's like, yeah, what? Yeah. Okay, Wayne, you know you're not cool. I got this.
That's amazing.
You see him on the Super Bowl halftime show?
I haven't yet.
And they had Ludacris and they had Little John.
I knew they had Ludacris. I didn't know they had Little John.
Yeah, man. You can't have without Little John.
Yeah.
What? Okay.
Great impression. Oh man. So your passion for K-Entertainment holds no bounds, Christian, and we've covered so much from your time in action sports to your time in as DJ Barbecue as we know it now. There's this tiny little thing that we skimmed over that I just want to go back to, and that was your time as a radio host at Kerrang Radio. At that time, you got to interview bands like The Cult, MGMT, Queens of the Stone Age, and Dave Grohl. A little lesson for myself and Max. How do you prepare to interview such huge rock stars?
I like to ask questions that they've never been asked before. So one of my favorite questions is to ask, what two food combinations shouldn't go together, but when you put them together, it somehow tastes really good? Like we were interviewing the Subways, and then it's like, I put apricots in my spag bowl. Emily from Metric, she was like, I like salt on a chocolate cake, but that kind of works. Hmm. The cribs were like, I like chocolate covered pretzels. You just get weird, you know.
Yeah, Dunkin' chips and milkshake. Yeah,
that's it. Coldplay. Yeah, yeah. We were interviewing them, and Chris Martin didn't have an answer for me. We put all the kid away, and he comes back into the room. Double cream on Weetabix. You know, that's one of my things. I was like, okay, there we go.
Okay, cool.
When we were interviewing Ian Asprey from The Cult, they told me we were going to get like 5-10 minutes with him. And I'm like, I want more. So I researched that dude, and I found out he's really into graffiti. He's really into denim. He's really into Japanese fabrics for clothing. He has been touring with The Doors as Jim Morrison. So I asked him about that because that seemed pretty. He's like, yeah, well, I mean, The Doors, Jim Morrison, that's like my Shakespeare as a musician. I've been touring with The Doors for 4 years. It was great. I was Jim Morrison. I was acting. I was playing another role. It was amazing as a performer, you know? And then I said, you know, you started the whole kind of Lollapalooza thing. He's like, yeah, we saw Glastonbury. We started Lollapalooza over in the States, which became an iconic traveling festival as well. And then I talked about trainers and Japanese denim, and he just kept talking. We got an hour interview with him. And I remember his manager comes out like, you were not supposed to do that. Yeah. He liked you.
Yeah.
And then my show was live from 7 to 10 every night. So around 10 o'clock, I'd be getting ready to run to catch, you know, maybe the last couple songs from a band, maybe an encore if I'm lucky. But with The Cult, because they got so many hits, I got like two songs at the end of the gig, and then I got three encores because they have the hits. And then a lot of times we go backstage and hang out with The Horrors, you know, loads of the band, like, so many bands. We just go backstage because we hung out with them. And then they go, where do we go? I go, okay, I'll take you to Actress and Bishop in the Jewelry Quarter on off Lionel Street. We're going to go see a band who plays third Thursday every month. This band have toured with The Who, Beatles, and Dougie from Diamond Head, which pretty much is one of the best, one of Metallica's favorite bands. He'll be playing bass tonight. And you bring in these hot bands, and they're like, it's fucking Dougie from Diamond Head, you know? I'm like, yeah. You go, you get this on tap? I'm like, yeah, drink with Dougie. you know? I drink with all these guys because this is a, it's a local bar. And then the guy who runs it was my buddy. He would do a lock-in and we just drink beers until they want to go home to their hotel room.
That's awesome. Christian, you've dropped a lot of names, but I want to know, like, which name has made you feel starstruck?
Okay, I've interviewed, of all the artists I've interviewed, I've only lost the ability to speak once. And I was on the red carpet at the Metal Hammer Golden God Awards. I mean, I've just interviewed Joe Perry from Aerosmith. I said, you know, my mom played me Toys in the Attic all the time. Is there anybody here that has inspired you? And he's like, well, Christopher Lee's right there, you know, because he was winning an award. He did a spoken word metal album with some Italian opera band. And he's like, I grew up watching him he was the bad guy in every movie with me and my mom when I was growing up. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. How was last night? You headlined Download. He's like, yeah, it was freezing. I had to keep running off stage to get hand warmers. And I interviewed Joe Perry fine. I got to interview Scott Gorham from Thin Lizzy. He was a great storyteller because he said, Phil Lynott, lead singer of Thin Lizzy, I never met a man who did more drugs, drank more booze, shagged more women, and slept less nights than Phil Lynott. I love that quote. And
shout out.
And after the interview, he's like, hey, mate, where are you from? I go, I'm from Washington, D.C. He's like, no way. I was performing with Thin Lizzy. We were having a great show. I jumped on top of one of the speaker stacks and we were giving it some. And, you know, Phil's in the middle of Boys Are Back in Town. I jump off the speaker stack. My guitar goes this way. My body goes this way. My kneecap popped off into the crowd. I lost my kneecap. So we had to stop the show. They had to cart me off, took me to a hospital. Luckily for me, a very important assassination attempt happened that day. Ronald Reagan, they tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan, our president, and they flew in every top doctor for foot, shoulder, knee, head, everything, to everything. So imagine these doctors, you know, a lot of them are just twiddling their thumbs because, like, you know, a couple guys got hit, you know, Baker got hit. He was in a wheelchair for life after that. But the knee surgeon was there and he wasn't needed. So he hears that Scott Gorham, the guitarist from Disney, is in room 202. Yeah, I'll do pro bono. I got this, you know. I'd love to say hey guys, I wait.
Move so aside.
I've interviewed all these guys, and I've had great interviews with them. And the one guy that I started trying to ask questions was Joe Elliott from Def Leppard. And I just lost the ability to speak. And then my director had to grab the microphone and finish the interview for me.
Really?
That was it. I've interviewed so many iconic people.
Wow.
I couldn't interview Joe Elliott.
What was it?
I don't know. I love Def Leppard, but I love everybody. But that one was the one that just tripped me up.
Yeah. I mean, a legend.
Yeah.
You know, right. But it's a legend to you. And to go back, I'm glad that you said to ask people questions that they've never been asked before, because I firmly believe that in our penultimate segment, we have some pretty interesting questions for you, Christian.
You drop penultimate. What a word, right?
Great
makes
word.
Makes you sound smart.
Great word.
It makes me feel smart.
Christian?
Yep.
This new segment, we've never done it before on the show. We wanted to spice things up right at the end for anyone who's getting a little bit tired. Not that they would, because this has been an absolute amazing energy fest.
Thank you.
It's safe to say that your voice in action sports is iconic. And beyond your work presenting TV shows like Rad and The Groms, you narrated and played characters in hit video game Colin McRae's Dirt. Now, I'm going to start reading out one of your lines from Colin McRae's Dirt 2 and 3, and I want you to finish the sentence.
Oh, shoot.
And we're going to put fun little sound effects for the listeners at home. You ready?
No. I have not played these games for It'll a be long
there.
Time.
It'll be there.
Oh, my God.
Okay. I'll start. You finish. Give me an O. Give me a U. Give me a...
Give me an O. Oh God, I'm having a brain fart. Give me an O, give me a...
I'll give you a little clue. You're gonna be driving around and somebody goes a little bit off-piste.
I don't know, man. What did I say?
It's give me a tea. Tea? Yeah, I fancy a cuppa. Oh, yeah. Dude's out.
I wrote that line, too. One of my favorite lines is like, one of the games, we did a bit of Demolition Derby. And so, you know, there's a lot of people just going straight for the side doors. Perpendicular awesomeness.
That's so good.
Hey, upload that clip to YouTube. Because they were trying to be all, they had a feature where you could upload the clips to YouTube.
Yeah.
Do not upload that clip to YouTube. There's no point.
Oh, man. Cringe is the new sexy.
I forgot that line. You know, I wrote all the nicknames in Dirt 2. So you can, I did a lot of red herrings that I thought would get pulled out. I got teabag in. I wrote teabag thinking
what up,
it would
D-bag?
Be. Yeah.
Yeah.
D-bag? You had me, Ken Block, Travis Pastrana, all these guys who were racing with you. You know, watch it, teabag. They had no idea what teabagging was.
That's brilliant.
So McLovin. I got McLovin in there too.
Nice.
Because that's when Superbad just came out.
Oh, man.
So for those you don't know,
it's McLovin.
That's
Christian
good.
Is the narrator from an amazing video game called Colin McRae's Dirt. And he was there for Dirt 2 and 3, narrating, getting people hyped up. You were even the PR manager at one point.
Yeah, so Dirt 3 or Dirt Showdown, I was the PR manager. And it's funny because, like, instead of being the hype manager, I'm a dickhead manager.
Yeah.
So I'm with all these actors and we're all, you know, doing lines together. And they go, Christian, you need to be a bit more of a dick. So I want you to grab a glass of imaginary whiskey, get a cigar. I want you to sip the whiskey, hit the cigar, and then deliver your lines.
Nice.
And you're cocky, you're a manager and stuff. And I was like, ah, cool. So it was fun to play that role. Because usually it's just, they always want the rad presenter.
Yeah.
You know, woohoo! Yeah. Going fast and taking chances. That kind of shit, you know? So it was nice to sit back. Because you destroy your voice box. You're doing a month of like 5 hour sessions a day. And by the last week, I'm just getting a jar of Manuka honey, just like, you know, spoon feeding it.
Shugging it.
Yeah, because you're scraping the bottom of your voice box to be heard. It's hard.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
But it's fun. But that's a great line.
Yeah, man.
That you recollect. How'd you find that line?
Don't you worry. There's more of them. Are you
we
ready?
We got a couple more, man.
Oh, shit.
Are you ready for the next one?
Obviously not.
Ram, bam, slam.
Thank you, ma'am.
Amen. Yeah. Nailed it.
I wrote that too.
Straight into the next one. This one's a bit tricky, though. It starts T-bone.
T-bone.
Think food.
T-bone delicious.
Yeah. Nice.
Again, that was from the Demolition Derby.
Demolition Derby.
In Dirt Showdown. We did 3 games.
Yeah.
Wow. T-bone. Well, you know, because I'm currently.
That's a great pun, though.
I'm the voice of Radio X Classic Rock right now. And so when in between all these rock songs, you'll get to me, you know, Radio X, classic rock. But the stuff they use the most is all the stuff that I record after I've read all the lines they've given me. Mm. Turn it up to 11, you know?
Yeah, man.
One louder. You know, let's do this. Woo!
Yeah.
It's all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Man, I feel pumped just listening to it.
What else we got?
We've got a... this one's an analogy. Okay. So... like trying to hug, and this is you describing extreme sports. It's like trying to hug.
Oh my God, I remember this line. Oh shit, it's like trying to hug.
Want a clue?
A porcupine?
It isn't porcupine.
That would have been good though.
Yeah.
An angry bear?
It is an angry bear. You get one more guess, I'll give you a little hint. Dun dun. That's the hint.
Dun dun. I don't know, man.
Dun, 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 dun. It's like trying to hug a shark.
It's like trying to hug a shark. That's comedy stuff there, right?
Comedy gold, yeah, man.
We thought, like, when you're playing the game, you know, it's driving.
Yeah.
But if some random shit that I'm saying to you whilst you're driving can just make you giggle.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, oh, these are memorable moments.
Yeah.
How the fuck did you find this shit?
Oh, dude. This I want to give credit
to. Is there
a
website?
There's a gamer community who have tirelessly spent their nights translating all of the narration script of pretty much every video game. I can't remember.
You gotta what send me the URL, is. Man.
I'll send it to you
because
there's some gems. And all the comments are like, oh yeah, I loved that.
Oh, that's good. Because a lot of times I don't like to read my YouTube comments just because, you know, people find me a prick. Because they don't like, some people just don't like excitable.
Because it's energy excitable. Yeah. Especially in the UK, sometimes they're a little bit too cynical, that sort of stuff. Mm. But man, for me, I feel pumped.
Yeah, we love it.
I feel really pumped. Whew. There's that one final one.
Done. Okay.
One final one in this
segment.
Sorry,
I'm so shit at this game.
And then we go into the final segment.
Like hugging a shark.
Well, this is another analogy. It's like the two cars are... ...
Sucking face.
Yes! Yeah. I'll give you that. Nice. Stevenson. That's a solid like 4 out of 6. That's good,
yeah,
man.
That's pretty good.
3 out of 6. I think I got
yeah.
half one. I'll take, you know what? That's not bad. Counting. I haven't played those games for a while. We got BAFTA nominated for Dirt 2.
Really?
Oh, yeah. What?
And it's funny, I got a Lady Hawk on the soundtrack for that second game. Like we had Prodigy on those games and everything.
Okay, Christian, the final segment. You might want to lean in for this one because it's about to get really intense.
He's leaning in, dude.
He's leaning in.
This is a quick fire round. It's would you rather. You don't have to elaborate too much.
Okay.
But
like I always do.
Some of these. No, that wasn't a dig.
He's running out of media space, isn't he?
Yeah. Tom's freaking
out. I'm
going
to dump some cards, guys. Can you give me a second?
Okay, Christian. Uh-huh. We're going to hit these at you pretty fast.
Okay.
Max, do you want to fire one each?
Yeah,
should we go for it?
Yeah. Should we alternate it?
Just to bring a little bit of energy in the room.
All right, let's go.
Okay, cool. I'll take it from the top.
Go.
Would you rather Tesco or Sainsbury's meal deal?
Sainsbury's.
Favorite type of onion?
Oh my gosh, man. I'm going to go with a white onion from Italy. They taste like apples. I forgot the name of it. Ross Cuffs are really good. Also love a red onion. Go.
Charcoal or wood?
Lump wood. So cooked wood. So it looks like wood, but it's more charcoal. Yeah.
Mm. Barbecue brisket or barbecue pork belly?
I'm going to go pork is how I make a living, but brisket's the holy grail. So I'd rather eat brisket, but I love cooking pork.
Nice.
Peanut butter, crunchy or smooth?
Crunchy.
Bubble tea, yay or nay?
Yay, man.
Best biscuit in the world. I'm talking about the British term biscuit.
Oh, God. Yeah, so everybody, they're not from Maryland, but I love a Maryland chocolate chip cookie. And I'm from Maryland.
Oh.
Yep.
It's just connected. I realized, Maryland cookies.
We make cookies.
The penny just dropped for me, too. Yeah. I never realized
it. It's a company over here, and they name it Maryland.
That's crazy.
But, They're not famous for being Maryland chocolate chip cookies. Yeah.
Oh, they're very affordable cookies.
It's an affordable go-to cookie. Although, what's that one that's like got chalk on the bottom and it's got a bit of coconut in there? Crumble thing? Crumbies?
Coconut.
Tom?
I don't know, man.
That's the biscuit bandit over
Those
there.
Those are really good biscuits. Desert Island Biscuits.
Yeah, that's the podcast. Shotgun.
My friends do a podcast called Better Desert Island Crisps. Nice. Like if you go to an island with three crisps, what are those crisps?
I bet they can get an hour out of that.
Yeah,
mine would be a nacho chip, cracked pepper and salt kettle, and a McCoy salt and vinegar.
Yeah,
with the ridges. Yeah. Those are my three.
Yeah, the kettle chips have to get in.
I feel like mine would all be like a Ridge crisp.
Yeah,
like Max, like paprika, Max, the smoky barbecue. I just love that.
Mm.
Love that Ridge. Sorry, I love that Ridge. Who asked the last one? Fire. Yeah, sorry.
All right, I'm next.
Go, Max.
All right, we're back in. Inline or quads?
Quads.
Fishtail or penny?
Fishtail.
And then bearing in mind, the other one gets canceled off the earth.
Oh, shit. Fishtail.
There you go. Crocs or sliders?
I love a slider.
Same, man.
Barbecue sauce or hot sauce? Remember, the other one gets canceled off the face of the earth.
Hot sauce.
DJ Barbecue World exclusive Vic's hot sauce.
One, man.
You have a barbecue sauce, right?
Yeah, barbecue sauce from Planet Dam.
Yeah,
in the first book, it's a great recipe.
Okay,
but it's been canceled.
I mean, it's gone. Yeah, you had it.
But hot sauce is like a flavor enhancer. It lifts things like salt.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can't get rid of salt.
Nah.
Go.
Right. Food truck or Michelin star restaurant?
Food truck.
Kimchi or sauerkraut?
Kimchi.
Skydiving or bungee?
My dad banned me from bungeeing. Skydiving.
BMX racing or park?
Park.
Favorite driver you've ever met?
Favorite what?
Driver.
Driver?
Yeah, what do you mean by driver?
Favorite driver you've ever met? That's not really a cancel.
Dolly Parton's driver. He drove us from Nashville to Charleston.
It was a crazy specific question, but I kind of liked it.
Mike,
yeah.
The nicest dude ever. Yeah, we were on a barbecue tour for Hellman's back in the day. And Mike drove us across, and he's Dolly Parton and George Strait's driver.
Mad.
Well, that's all the other drivers in the world being cancelled. Sorry, guys. Don't know how that question got in there. Winter Olympics or Summer Olympics?
Oof. I prefer to watch the Winter Olympics, but I got to host the BMX racing at the Summer Olympics. So, winter.
Yeah, come on.
Snowboarder.
All right, and we've got our last question here.
Okay.
It's not really a would you rather, but if it could rain any beverage, what would it be?
Beer.
Done.
Pilsner or Helles lager.
Couldn't agree more.
Make it rain beer, man.
Man, that would be absolutely.
Or make it rain Parmesan.
All that.
Or salt.
Or salt.
Salt would be interesting.
Just any kind of cheese.
Chili flakes.
Yeah.
Chili flakes. I love making it rain.
You've ever had that worm salt that got quite big? There was like a little trend of like worm salt. It's like spicy worms mixed into the salt, I think.
Well, really? They make a salsa with it. And so my favorite show on Netflix is called Taco Chronicles. And they do the history of every taco and where it kind of came from and how it was adapted in Mexico. And then they just kind of show how it's evolved. But the barbacoa episode from season one of Taco Chronicles, it'll make you cry.
Oh,
yeah, but there's some salsas where they mix in the agave worm.
Yeah,
into the salsa, and you're dipping your nachos and your salsa on top of your taco is worms.
Nice.
That's that worm that's at the bottom of tequila bottles.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
Those kind of worms.
Yeah, man.
They mix them in with salsas. Well, we're going to be eating a lot of cricket flour soon.
Yeah, because of the protein, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Man, I do not look forward to that. I've tried a cricket chocolate bar, and it just tasted almost like a protein bar, like that just like that dusty, chalky, very dry. But that's ground up. Maybe there's just a way to marinate. Maybe DJ Barbecue could do barbecue
some
cricket.
Kind of flies. I mean, apparently, they're making burgers out of flies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of protein, a lot of flies.
My gut's telling me no.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one, to be honest.
In a post-apocalyptic world, you're going to fucking eat anything, dude.
Please do a DJ Barbecue post-apocalypse scene for us, because that would be amazing.
It's gonna need the barbecue sauce. Can I get the barbecue sauce back?
Yeah. You might have to get that one back.
For flavor.
New cookbook.
I don't
want to
enhance that flavor. I want to mask it with sugar, vinegar, and tomatoes.
Yeah, and a lot of them.
Christian Stevenson, we are way over time, but we've enjoyed every single second of it, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sharing your stories.
Scenes is brought to you by Truant London. I am your host, Kosti Kontaravdis. My co-host on this episode was Max Ryby Williams. The producers on this show are Lucy Austin and Max Ryby Williams. Research by Ruby Carter. Our technical director is Tom Kemp. Edit and sound design by me, Kosti Kontaravdis, with music by Otis McDonald. Of course, an extra special thanks goes to our guest, Christian Stevenson. Until next time, see you.